So as I mentioned, we have been looking at the kings of Israel, and that's where we're going to continue. Reminder before I get into it, guys, we have a men's meeting on Saturday, so I just want to remind all the men about that this coming Saturday, last one of the year. So as we prepare for 2022. We have been looking at the end of 1 Samuel, and we have been involved in the study of the transition between Saul to David, and the things, the events that went on around that. In our study last week, we noted and looked at how Saul had went to a medium to seek some kind of advice. He was trying to have an opportunity to talk with Samuel. We spent some time discussing that. We then got into David's situation at the time. Of course, he's living with the Philistines at this point in Ziklag. He attempts to go fight with them, but the captains of the Philistines refuse his help. So he goes back home, only to find out that the village where he's been living and all his people has been burned, and the women and children have been taken captive. And so then he goes to retrieve them and bring them back back to their families. And that's and then we ended last week by getting into the discussion of the end of Saul's life, his death at Mount Gilboa. And that's where we'll pick up tonight as we push forward. We'll finish that section there at the end of 1 Samuel. And then as we begin 2 Samuel, we'll notice how David, his reaction to Saul's death, kind of interesting. But we'll note what he does in reaction to that. And then we begin that final section here of his transition to being king. And it's not super smooth. There's a little rough patch here before he's named king. We'll note how he's anointed king of Judah, and the son of Saul, the living son of Saul, is named the king of Israel. And then that'll lead to war breaking out between the two groups, and ultimately to Abner leaving Saul's camp to come over to help David. So that's where we're projecting to get tonight. We'll see how far we get. So let's go back to 1 Samuel 31 and note what's going on here. So Saul and his company is at war with the Philistines. They're in the Valley of Jezreel. They're fighting, and here is Saul on Mount Gilboa, and he's watching what's going on. And we note in verses 1 and 2 that they were fighting, and in the midst of the fight, the men of Israel, because they're losing, attempt to flee. It says they fled before the Philistines and fell slain on Mount Gilboa. So they're running away and dying as they run. Now, we noted how this is a kind of a contrast to the victory of David over Goliath, and how in that one it was the Philistines running away. Well, here is the reverse. We have the fall of Saul occurring right before his eyes. As he watches on, he sees three of his sons. And I may have misspoke last week. I was thinking about it. I may have said that these were all of his sons. I didn't mean to say that. He does have another son. We'll note him in a little bit. But these three sons die in the battle. Jonathan, Abinadab, and Michalishua. And they all fall to the Philistines. All right, so just real quickly, we note where we are on the map. So we're up here in the Valley of Jezreel on Mount Gilboa, and you see Gilboa there. So somewhere on this mountain here, probably, that this is all taking place. I won't go into detail on that because we dealt with that last week, but verses 3 and 4, if we go back to the context, tell us that the battle was pressed hard against Saul, and the archers found him. So after the Israelites, the front lines begin to collapse, and they collapse in retreat, and the Philistines begin to fill those gaps. They're coming straight at the mountain where Saul is. He's lost his protection, and in order to attack at him, the Philistines decide to let loose their arrows. And as verse 3 tells us, that some of those arrows found Saul. It says he was badly wounded by the archers. And Saul, seeing what's going on, his response is to basically commit suicide here. He initially asked one of the young men there to do it. He refuses. Verse 4, then Saul said to his armor bearer, draw your sword and thrust me through with it, lest these uncircumcised come and thrust me through and mistreat me. But his armor bearer would not, for he feared greatly. Therefore Saul took his own sword and fell upon it. And so he basically decides to end his own life. So we really see the fall of Saul in very graphic details here. Any questions about anything up till this point? Tragic and sad, right? What a sad end to such a promising life. If you go back to the first sections of Samuel, when he first finds Saul, and Saul had a lot of promise, you know, the people loved him, you know, God selected him, and it ends so tragically.
It's interesting too, his armor bearer wouldn't kill him, right? Mm-hmm. David wouldn't kill him. I mean, you know, all this fear, Saul had to kill himself.
Yeah. A brutal, brutal end. And it gets worse for the Israelites. If you go on, of course, the Philistines are going to essentially make the most out of this victory. The next day, the verse 8 tells us that when the Philistines came to strip the slain, they found Saul and his three sons fallen on Mount Gibeah. So they cut off his head and stripped his armor and sent messengers throughout the land of the Philistines to carry the good news to the house of their idols and to the people. They become hardened, you know, in their minds about their great victory here as they see it. It's sad that even in death, sin continued to reign, right? So these idols are lifted up in some way in the people's minds and hearts of the Philistines. That's just really sad, isn't it? And it only makes them more hardened toward that evil practice. And so when we get to verse 11, it says, but when the inhabitants of Jabesh Gilead heard what the Philistines had done to Saul, all the valiant men arose and went all night and took the body of Saul and the bodies of his sons from the walls of Bethshan, and they came to Jabesh and burned them there, and they took their bones and buried them under the tamarisk tree in Jabesh and fasted 7 days. So what the Philistines had done is they basically nailed them to this wall as some kind of prize or victory. Kind of really disgusting if you think about it. But there he is nailed. Well, to prevent that, these inhabitants of Jabesh go and take those bodies and give them a more proper burial. and burying them there. Just sad. I don't know not a lot of good you can say about that last chapter of 1 Samuel. Comments? I do think it's interesting to see David's reaction, very different than the Philistines. They are joyous and happy about what's happened. That's not the attitude of David. If we go on into 2 Samuel chapter 1, verse 1 tells us after the death of Saul, when David had returned from striking down the Amalekites. So David had just had, it's been a whirlwind of emotions for him. He first comes back to Ziklag, finds the village burned, his wives and all the people's wives taken. The people want to kill David, if you remember, because that happened. Well, he goes and then goes and finds them, destroys the Egyptian band, gets their wives and their children, brings them back. So he's went from anger to victory, now to mourning. He's striking down the Amalekites. David returned 2 days in Ziklag, and on the third day, behold, a man. I said Egypt, I meant the Amalekites before. Meant the Amalekites. And on the third day, behold, a man came from Saul's camp with his clothes torn and dirt on his head. And when he came to David, he fell to the ground and paid homage. David said to him, "Where do you come from?" And he said, "I have escaped from the camp of Israel." And David said to him, "How did it go? Tell me." And he answered, "The people fled from the battle, and also many of the people have fallen and are dead. And Saul and his sons and his son Jonathan are also dead." And so here they are, they're in Ziklag, and here comes this young man who looks beaten up, battered. He's torn and dirty. And they begin to question him, and this is how he finds out what's happened in the Valley of Jezreel. And just to give us an idea, I mean, this young man's been going for a little while. The Valley of Jezreel is up here. Well, Ziklag is all the way down here. So he's had to travel quite a ways just to get to where David is. And there's David in the land of the Philistines. He's come to tell him this bad news. Now, what's David's reaction to it? Well, if you go on and read in verse 5, it says, David said to the young man, who told him, how do you know that Saul and his son Jonathan are dead? And the young man who told him, "By chance I happened to be on Mount Gilboa, and there was Saul leaning on his spear, and behold, the chariots and the horsemen were close upon him." All right, so he says, "I was right there, I was an eyewitness, I saw exactly what happened, and that's how I bring you news." And then in verse 8, he says, David said to him, "Who are you?" And I answered him, "I am an Amalekite." And he said to me, "Stand beside me." He's talking about his conversation with Saul. Saul asked, "Who are you?" He says, "I'm an Amalekite." And he said to him, "Stand beside me and kill me, for anguish has seized me, and yet my life still lingers." So earlier, all we knew was it was an armor barrier. Well, now we're getting a few more details about what exactly happened there. It was this young Amalekite man. Take it back. The first guy, so Saul must have asked more than one person to kill him. Sorry. The first guy kills himself. This young man must have been there. I don't know when this happened, but Saul asked the young man to kill him, and the young man doesn't want to. He says, "By chance I happened to be among..." Let's see. So I stood beside him. Oh. Yeah, I'm sorry, I got myself confused there. Yeah, so the text tells us earlier, if I can get this right, I'm sorry. Saul killed himself by falling on his sword. Here is this young man who's traveled all this distance to David. And now what's he claiming? He's claiming that he killed him and not, he makes no mention of Saul actually killing himself. So, why would he do that?
Is it the same guy?
Which same guy?
Is it the same one that Saul asked?
No, see, I'm told, let me back up, because I'm sorry, I got myself and y'all confused. Okay, so, this is not the armor bearer, right? This is an Amalekite. So what happens, Saul asks his armor bearer to kill him. His armor bearer says no. So Saul kills himself. And then if you read the text, the armor bearer kills himself. Right. So that's a whole different event. Then you have this young man coming to David, bringing news of Saul's death and Jonathan's. And he says he killed Saul. All right. Does that make sense? I'm sorry I got that so confused. I got myself confused. I should have had that right to start with.
I apologize. David was off doing his own thing with Amalekites, and Saul and his sons were fighting the Philistines.
Yes.
How far were those two battles apart?
Okay, so
Amalekite end up with the crown, because it doesn't say anything about the Philistines. You know that the crown had been there.
All right, they're a long way away. So I'm glad you asked that. So if I can get out here where everybody can see it. So here's the Valley of Jezreel. This is where the Philistines and the Israelites fought. This is where Saul died. David, in his battle, came down this way, and somewhere down here met the men who had destroyed the village of Ziklag here. So those took place very far from one another. But now David has come back to Ziklag. All right, and so this young man has traveled all the way down here somehow. I don't know how he got here, but he's traveled down to Ziklag. If he ever truly was at the battle. Now, maybe he's making all of it up.
But he knew so many details about it, and then he had some of Saul's stuff. So he must have been pretty close and seen it and saw it.
Yeah, and it's interesting that he chose to lie about it. I am sorry. I should have had that right to start with. But I hope everybody's clear. Dwayne and then.
I mean, it sounds like he's trying to kind of get David's favor by saying, hey, you know, Saul was your enemy. I killed him. You know, I'm such a good guy. But of course, David doesn't look at it like that.
Yeah, and we're going to. Exactly.
And you killed God's anointed, therefore, goodbye.
So maybe he's trying to curry some kind of favor. We'll note in a minute, David believes him. Yes, ma'am, you have a question.
And this version that I'm reading, in one verse he said, there was Saul leaning on his spear in the enemy chariots and charioteers closing in on him, and then you said he killed him. So that was like two stories.
Yeah. Well, and as far as I know, we don't know how long it's been since the battle in Jezreel and now, and David finding out. I don't know of any indication of when exactly that happened, because we do know David did some things after he got back to Ziklag by giving some gifts to the elders of Judah, but we don't really know the time frame. Now, that young man is not going to be able to travel that distance in just a few hours, right? That's going to take a little while. If he was in that battle, and if it's not just all hearsay.
But somehow he got the crown.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he's got obvious things here, tokens, yeah. And so he's made up the story probably to curry favor with David. He doesn't get the reaction, though, I think he was hoping for. I'm sure he knew David and Saul were rivals, and he knew Saul hated David, maybe. And in some way, he's trying to curry favor. Well, he says, I took the crown that was on his head and the armlet that was on his arm, and I brought them here to my Lord. All right, so he's got the actual crown. That's pretty significant, right? Have a king's crown. That crown symbolizes and means a lot. And so I guess he really thought he was ready to rake in the riches, or the prestige at least. Well, you go on, go down to verse 14. That's not the reaction he gets. David said to him, "How is it you were not afraid to put out your hand to destroy the Lord's anointed?" So it appears David believed him, right? He believed the story. Notice his reaction, though. Then David called one of the young men and said, "Go execute him." To see the shock on that young man's face must have been pretty dramatic. His day just went from maybe something to be good to, "Oh, wait, I'm going to die now." And it's not like kill him in a, like, you know, in our judicial system, people sit on death row for years and years. It's immediate. You continue reading, and he struck him down so that he died. And David said to him, "Your blood be on your head and on your own mouth. For your own mouth has testified against you, saying, 'I've killed the Lord's anointed.'" And so David is angry. He's angry that Saul has died in this way. Some might expect him to be joyous or to rejoice and say, "Finally, I'm freed under the hand of this man who's made himself my enemy. I no longer have to run from him any longer." He may even think, "Well, now I get to be king." That's not his reaction, is it? What was his statement? "Your blood be on your own head, because you have thought to kill God's anointed." He still saw Saul as God's anointed, right? Yes, ma'am.
Jonathan was his best friend.
Mm-hmm. And that's the other news he brought, right? We can't overlook that. Jonathan, we know how close they were with one another, and all of that just really fell hard on David. If you continue reading, I don't have this up here, but...
Right. Just before you go, mm-hmm. So, David's reaction here, we talked about it last week. I mean, he had respect for Saul because he was God's son. And we just always need to have respect for each other, even people... Sometimes in the church, you might do us wrong, or even when people fall, right? Mm-hmm. And they're not, that's God's anointed or God's child, right? Mm-hmm. In some way. I mean, it should never bring us satisfaction or joy when someone, you know, falls or doesn't do well. And I just think that really shows, you know, the heart of David. It's not a typical reaction that a human might have who could gain from, you know, basically God's anointed falling. He's going to gain in some way. But he's not looking at that. He's looking at, you know, where Saul is. It's a sad thing. It's not something necessarily to be celebrated that it came, that was anointed by God, failed.
Yeah, and that's a great point. And, you know, the application of that goes this pretty wide spectrum. I mean, you think about, especially in the church, right? We should never be happy to see someone else struggle spiritually. That should always be deep mourning for us. As well as even people out in the community that maybe we don't get along with. Do we take joy in their failure? Right, or their hardship? We shouldn't. You know, I see things, you see things online, you see things, you know, people talking and things where they celebrate when somebody has a struggle in life. I mean, Saul, you know, did not live. I mean, look how bad he treated David. And yet David still, at the end, was deeply saddened and heartbroken at it. You know, it is a very big reminder for us, you know. We need not live like that. We don't glory in others' failure. And that can be hard. sometimes. We can get caught up in emotion, get caught up in politics, get caught up in other things, right? Got to be careful. And as you read on in that first chapter, I mean, David, he writes this song or poem of lament about losing these two men, these important men in his life. And so you can continue reading there and read about some of the words he has to say about that. David, a great poet, right? He was very good at expressing his emotions through his writing. Any questions or comments? So, what is the political landscape at this point? Things have changed, haven't they, in Israel? You've been defeated by the Philistines, your hated enemies, your rivals. You've got an interesting situation. No king. And the king has died. Who would typically follow the king? His oldest son, right? And then it would go down after that, the oldest living son. And he does have a son. Ish-bosheth is one of his children. His, I guess I'm assuming, oldest living son. I don't know if it actually says that, but... he just lost three. Yeah, he just lost three, so I mean, how many... But here you are. Israel didn't really like Saul at the end. He is, if he took a popularity poll, he probably wouldn't do very well. I'm not sure the people were super excited about having him. You know, I mean, is he going to be like Saul? Right. What are we getting ourselves into? And so, and remember, what did David do after he got those goods from the attack? How much are they? When he went to the people who burned Ziklag and he got all that pillage from them, what'd he do with it? Gave it to whom, though? The who? Who? The elders of Judah. And I do think there's a significance to that, and especially when we get into this next section here. So what happens as a result of it? So verse 1 tells us where David went to start with, which is a good reminder to us. We've hit this a lot. I just remind you, where's the first place he goes? Well, verse 1 says, after this, David inquired of the Lord. So this is a big moment in the life of David, in the life of all Israelites. And David wants to go to God, right? God, what would you want? What is it your desire is? Because his desire may be different than ours. And so getting him involved, I think, is important. And so he says, shall I go up into the cities of Judah? All right, now his enemy, Saul, who had ran him out of Judah and out of Israel, he's gone now. Is it basically safe for me to go home? David's wanted to go home for a while. And so he said, should I go up to the cities of Judah? And the Lord said to him, go up. And David said, to which shall I go up? And he said, to Hebron. Now, David has this... is God talking to him directly, right? You know, whoever kneels down or you get in your place where you're praying ever expects an answer. What would you do? What would you do if you ever heard a voice talking back?
Hopefully listen,
but you'd be shocked, right? That's not typical, right, to have God speak directly back to you. That doesn't happen today. But somehow God answers David. Is he answering him directly, or how this is going on? The Holy Spirit, you know, there with David. We know he is. And so David is asking and God is giving. Or did God, now maybe what we're not told exactly how he did. Maybe he went to a prophet and a prophet came to him. But anyway, God gets him this answer and he says, I want you to go to Hebron. And so that's what David is going to do. Verse 4, he goes on to say the men of Judah. So there he is in Hebron. He's home. You can imagine how kind of, it's been a tough period for David, but how good it must have felt to go home, right? To be in Judah again. You know, I've had the opportunity to travel out of country a few times to go international travel and spend a little time. And then I always think about, or it comes back to me real easily, that feeling when I finally got back home, right? When I, even just getting back in the States, I remember just how kind of just that felt right? I felt home. And here's David, he's home. And there he is, as verse 4 tells us, and the men of Judah came, and there they anointed David king over the house of Judah. When they told David, it was the men of Jabesh Gilead who buried Saul. Before we get into the rest of this, so he's made king over Judah. When we think about Judah, what's the significance of Judah? Through Judah, right? Tribe of Judah. What's in Judah?
Jerusalem.
That's where the tabernacle is held, right? It's where the city of David is. That's where he's from, right? The city of David, Bethlehem. And so the elders of Judah have come and they said, we want you to be our king. And we'll see, is that going to cause some tension? And did they have the right to do that? He goes on to say, and they tell him about where Saul is buried. David sent messengers to the men of Jabesh Gilead and said to them, may you be blessed by the Lord because you've shown loyalty to Saul, your Lord, and buried him. Now may the Lord show steadfast love and faithfulness to you, and I will do good to you because you have done this thing. Now therefore let your hands be strong, be valiant. For Saul, your Lord, is dead, and the house of Judah has anointed me king over them. All right, and so David hears about Jabesh Gilead and what they've done, and maybe that gives him some peace, like that Saul is not, his body's not off somewhere in Philistia, you know, where it's being, you know, used as some kind of propaganda tool. But now he knows it's buried. And he wants to honor them. But he also begins to take on the title of king. You notice what he says at the very end of that. I am now king of Judah. Verse 9. Okay, so that's what's going on in Judah. And I need to finish this little section before we end class. So you've got that going on in Judah. But what about the rest of Israel? All right, verse 8. Abner. Now, who is Abner? Who? Army captain of who? Saul. So he's Saul's top army guy, right? He is the leader of an army. He's the guy that was sleeping when David came into the camp, right? But it's Abner, right? Abner is significant to Saul and to Israel. What is Abner doing while Judah, while the elders of Judah have anointed David king? Well, Abner, the son of Ner, commander of Saul's army, took Ish-bosheth, the son of Saul, and brought him over to Mahanaim and made him king over Gilead and the Asherites and Jezreel and Ephraim and Benjamin and all Israel. Did you realize that there was a divided kingdom before Rehoboam and Jeroboam? There was, for a short period. Before David became king, you had two different kingdoms. You had the kingdom of Judah and you had the kingdom of Israel. And that was divided up a little differently. But here's the divided kingdom. Verse 10 tells us that Ish-bosheth, Saul's son, was 40 years old when he began to reign over Israel and reigned 2 years. So this isn't a short amount of time. He's going to reign as king for 2 years. He goes on to tell us in verse 11, and at that time, and the time that David was king in Hebron over the house of Judah was 7 years and 6 months. So you got a little difference in time frame here between when Ish is killed, he's murdered, and before David finally unites all the tribes of Israel. In our next section, we're going to see the results of this. Now, you've got two kingdoms right there in amongst one another, two kind of newly formed kingdoms. Do you think you're going to have a little conflict? Absolutely, right? And so you get into 2 Samuel chapter 2, and you have this coming together of Abner and who was the commander of Saul's army, and now Ish-bosheth's army. He is there with Joab. Now, who's Joab? Am I losing y'all? Getting late, isn't it? It's midweek. Why don't we just stop there? I feel like we're casting off to sea. So I'm going to be out for the next couple of weeks. Patrick's going to teach next Wednesday, and then the Wednesday after that, Jody will be in here, and he will do 1 week for me. We'll be back after the first of the year. We'll dig back into this final part of the transition here of David becoming king. Any questions or comments? Yes, ma'am. Yeah.
And they shouldn't even have Saul to begin with, but people were insistent on it. So, you know, God gave them one. Well, this, and they messed up the transition of power. They didn't, the anointing of the firstborn son or the son of the king, that came from all the nations around them. It didn't come from God.
Yeah.
They're not asking God what to do other than David. They're not asking God what to do.
Yeah, and even Abner, there's no mention that he ever went to God and said, should I anoint the son of Saul, right? There's no indication of that. And they are new at this. And it's interesting, they didn't even have a transitional plan. I guess the plan originally was Jonathan, but they weren't ready for this. And we can talk about, you know, a transition from Saul to David and talk about it quickly, but this actually is a very messy period in Israelite history, this transition. And God warned them that this is what was going to happen. All right, thank y'all. We'll jump back in this in a couple of weeks. Thank you.